This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude, Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome to Sunny Postcard from Poprad, because where I am, it's gloriously sunny. I'm Eric Wiltshire at the base of the Tatry Mountains. I missed you all last week. Oh dear. Postcard from Poprad is named aptly after the name of Poprad, where I'm sitting quite warm and serene in the sun. It's lovely. Joining me as usual on the cyber sofa, it is none other than Lee Banks.
Hello, and I'm sitting here in the rain.
Oh, good.
It's going to rain. It has rained since January.
Well, I'm very happy for that. And also snuggled up on the sofa in the cyber world, it's co-founder of the Consumer Action Group, Mark Gander.
Yes, hello there. And it is very sunny here in Gay Perry.
So what you're saying is we've paid our taxes and he hasn't. Stand
yeah,
up.
I'll go with that.
All right, then. Okay. So, nice in Paris? Well, it would be if it was still working. Something just died.
Oh, no! Paris hasn't died, has it?
Something just died? Are you there, Mark? No, he's disappeared. Paris has died, ladies and gentlemen,
oh,
boys and
no,
girls.
Paris.
Come back, Paris, all is forgiven.
Oh, must have gone.
You're there. You're there. Goody. Yeah. Right, we'll say hi to the nice guys at Talk Radio X Replay Radio on Audio Boo and wherever other Mexican wave you're listening to us on. And of course, you wonderful folks on RTI. So much to get through, but a couple of serious things to get started. The hunt for the missing 5-year-old April Jones has continued. And I think one of the most astonishing things is the police saying, look, if you want to be a volunteer, just come and talk to us. And the volunteers have completely ignored the police, set up their own amazing coordinated teams in the search to try and find young April. And I think despair is setting in over there. I do know the man that was arrested has been charged, and the Welsh police were due to either charge or release Mark Bridger today, and he has been charged.
With murder, incidentally.
Yes.
Not with just abduction.
Yeah, with murder, which tends to increase the level of despair, I think. I think all we can say, gentlemen, is keep our fingers crossed and our prayers with the right God of your own choose, that she comes back in one piece.
Yes,
I think the circumstances are now that it is a murder charge and it's now become a murder hunt. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is I actually know McCullough quite well. I've visited there quite often. And it's a beautiful place. It's a place for old, ageing hippies such as I. And it's just a wonderful place. It's got an alternative atmosphere. It feels different. It's friendly. And funnily enough, Robert Plant actually wrote Stairway to Heaven. While he was there.
Maybe not such a good thing today. Let's move on, ladies and gentlemen. Another serious one to do. There was a tragic case of these wonderful police people helping out on what they thought was a burglary. One was PC Fiona Bone, and at Manchester Cathedral, which I think was very apt, the police themselves and friends and family all said goodbye to her. And it just... It really brings home, you know, lots of people slag off the police, they moan about the police, and all, you know, they're all bad. But in actual fact, you've got young people, just conventional PCs, going out to help the public and being shot to death. It just makes you realise how difficult their job is, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Once again, obviously, being from Manchester, I know the cathedral Deansgate, where it happened, where the funeral cortege took place. And it was just, I watched it on TV. Obviously, I wasn't there because I live in, I wasn't there. But the whole of the Deansgate actually clapped, not in an irreverent way, as the cortege went down. Mm. And it's one of the most dramatic funerals that's actually taken place in Manchester for a long time.
We'll be returning to the police later in the programme, but unfortunately it's the French lot. But that comes up later. Facebook is the third largest country in the world, and everybody said to me years ago it will never catch on. How bizarre is that? Facebook has hit 1 billion users, and even Mr. Gander's on it now, aren't you, Mark?
I am on it somewhere or other, yeah. but, I mean, although they're increasing and they seem to be sort of getting bigger, they're still besought by problems. And their share price, I think, is about half what it was when it was launched publicly. So it's actually in serious
trouble.
It's gone
up a little bit, actually, because it was $19 at one point.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's gone up, what is it, 21.8 now?
Yeah, it's gone up. And I think, to be honest, the original share price was ridiculously high anyway.
Well, it's an incredible thing, though, but I find it very strange and very scary that the third biggest country in the world's a cyber country. We've really moved. Now, this is the honest to God truth. We've moved into the wildest excesses of people like L. Ron Hubbard and Isaac Asimov.
I think it's also very interesting. I mean, if it really is going to be described as a country, and I don't actually think there's a lot of validity in that.
No, no, I think
there's no democracy there because there aren't any rights. The Facebook team basically decide what happens. People don't really have much of a say. There we are.
Just like democracy to be.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Well, by the way,
I wanted to say to Lee that a cortege is a bunch of flowers. A cortege is a procession.
Ah! I always rely on you to correct me.
Thank you very much. But yes. it does beg the question, though, if people are and I'm sure a lot of users do treat it maybe not as a country, more as a community.
Yes.
Whether it's got that kind of clout and therefore has got an incredibly long-term future.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a community. I think community is a good way to describe it. And maybe if you wanted to say it's the largest community in the world, I think that's really saying something. And that's probably really important. And I think it has great validity.
Lee?
Sorry, I'm just checking my vocabulary, making sure I'm going to use the right word.
Oh, shush now.
But don't worry, you don't need to check.
I really believe that this is probably one of the most scary things that could ever happen.
It's because you don't like it.
It's scary. Eh?
It's because you don't use it.
I do use it. I use it all the time. That's part of the problem. I've got thousands of friends on it, and I don't know one of them. You know? Yeah. And the people who are real friends who are on it, I don't communicate with on Facebook. I communicate with by phone or going for a pint with them or talking to them on the street or just being with them. If you're
like me, 20,000 leagues away from your mates... you can't really do that on a phone every day of the week because it costs money. You can't go and have a pint with them, that's for sure. And you can't bump into them in the street unless they've got on a plane to get here.
I agree with you. I know exactly what you're saying. And in reality, in the real world, which this isn't, I can understand that kind of value of it. It's just actually a different form of communication and has moved communication on into a different way of being. But the problem with it is it changes people's attitudes to relationships, to sharing with each other, and just takes the world into a different place. I can't see any great problem with calling Facebook a country. It's definitely a community, but it's a community based on paucity and falsehoods, and I'm sure those are wrong words, but it's the thing that it's based on isn't reality, and we need reality in this world. I think the next stories we're going to talk about are fascinating on that basis.
Well, yeah, but let's just say you see a picture on Facebook,
yes,
and you say that's really good chaps. What's false about that?
There's nothing false about that, but I agree with Lee to the extent, for instance, I think. The use of the word friend, I mean, they've used that, and now it's almost a sort of, you know, a Facebook kind of trademark, the use of the word friend. But in a way, it does tend to undermine the word friend. And I must say, I prefer, maybe because I'm just an old fuddy-duddy, but I prefer my sort of traditional idea of what my friend is.
Yeah, I agree with that. But it still doesn't make it false. That's the point.
Do you have many friends, Mark?
Well, you until recently.
Stop it, you two. Right, let's move on. Is space the new crime frontier? What if hackers hijacked a satellite? Well, it's pretty easy to do that.
What, hijack a satellite? Well, yeah. I'm going out to go and hijack one then, because I tell you what, I think it'd be incredible. But I think the real problem is that actually it is a real issue.
Right. Well, let me just put some technical. Let's just put some technical prowess onto this one a little bit.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Eric and his technical prowess.
How many
satellites have you hijacked?
One.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to admit this in public?
Yeah. Because we did it for fun.
I'll go and hijack it. That's what the terrorists can say. Oh, we only did it for fun. And then, let you off.
And then somebody else tried to hijack the channel I was on legitimately as well. But that was another story. No, I'm not telling you that one. But the truth is that when you send a signal up to a satellite, which is a huge, great dish you need, you know, it's sort of a 10-metre minimum wok, or if you've got other satellites, I accept, before anybody else criticises me, there are smaller. All of these satellites, you can send a signal to them, but it doesn't mean to say it will get broadcast or you've hijacked it, because another part of the satellite, completely unrelated, is controlled from in the likes of Astra in Luxembourg, or next door to Mark almost in Paris, you've got Eutelsat. And they can send up a telemetry message that says, oh, look, Lee's trying to hijack our satellite. We'll switch that bit off.
Right.
So it's quite difficult to do that.
For Lee, yeah, but for everybody else, really it's easy.
Clever. Yes.
People are really clever. Like, there's a bloke here.
Yeah.
Mark Roberts, a former space and cyber expert at the Ministry of Defence, who says that it is quite incredible how vulnerable these satellites are to potential criminals.
Not whilst they've got people monitoring them on the ground.
There are so many problems with people like Anonymous and all that lot, who seem to be able to go into the most secure systems of the world, and I'm talking about the Pentagon.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is really a satellite any more secure? It's only a...
Well, funnily enough, Mark, it is, because to go in... The Pentagon has a pipe going into it. A pipe
can't
going
see
into
the strings. So like,
I thought you said a pipe.
That's how they keep it up there.
Yeah, a pipe going into it. Which anybody with a bit of
pipe means in French.
Yeah, I'm not going there. where people can access it with a satellite. It's not one pipe that you need to access. You actually need to be inside the control room of the centre. And access that particular unit, which isn't connected to the pipe outside. So it becomes very difficult. And it is a good security measure they've got on it.
But I still think that if you've got an army of satellites up there in space, right, which provide us with vital streams of information 24 hours a day. They don't even stop on Christmas Day. They just do it. See, I mentioned Christmas.
Already.
And they just keep going. They keep going. And we... criminals or people have such power down on Earth now that they could wipe out these vital streams of information at the...
Do you know what's more scary?
What?
A speck of dust.
Well, what I was listening to something about that, about...
genuinely, if you get a piece of space debris, no bigger than a piece of dust...
Yeah.
And it happened to be in the right orbital position, about 23,000 miles up, and goes blasting through a bunch of satellites. In theory, it could damage a load of them quite simply. But they're designed to move around to avoid things. You know, it's...
They moved one this week, didn't they?
They moved... Actually, satellites move all the time because of the wind up there. And they wander around... Yes, baked beans. They wander around in a 70-kilometre cube, so they're always moving about. So in other words, if you want to put it in its crudest form, down on the ground, there's these guys that are playing like space invaders, moving these rockets around, or firing these rockets to keep the satellites in place. And that is where the issue of hijacking them becomes incredibly difficult, because unless you're the bloke on the ground, I suppose they could get an infiltrator in there who could do some nasty stuff, and they could, but the truth is it's very, very hard, and people tend to jump on these things and go, oh, it's like all the rubbish about mobile phone mouse in the past, they've got to have something to go and whinge about.
Well, I have a journalistic question to put to you, Oliver.
Okay, darling.
And Eric, ladies and gentlemen, will tell you, I've been putting some journalistic questions to him this week.
You have?
And the black and whiteness of journalism sometimes offends.
It does.
Yeah, right. Simply. You're
I'd like to just point out, by the way, very quickly, that it's not an army of satellites, it's a school of satellites.
I would like to say how difficult it is. There's a point of where you start to use poetry as opposed to the... Anyway, so, yes, you're right. Right. You say it's almost impossible to hijack these satellites.
Yep.
I put this to you, Mr. Wiltshire, directly. You yourself kidnapped one.
Yeah, but everybody knew about it.
But you still did it.
Yeah, we did it, but then they switched us off.
But it doesn't matter.
They
you
did.
You said it was impossible to do virtually, yet you've done because, one yourself.
Because... The master control room, which happened to be in America for this one, the master control room then saw the signal and switched it off before we'd even got more than about a couple of milliseconds out.
So journalism wins out again because you didn't actually kidnap one in the first place.
Well, I did. I got about 2 milliseconds on it. That counts. I was on it. I hijacked it.
I rest my case.
So in other words, whoever's putting this story out, it's bunkum.
The bloke from the Ministry of Defence.
Well, what would you trust him to put a 13-amp plug on?
I wouldn't trust him to go to war.
Well, there you go then. 3BEU and banks stage a DDoS cyber attack exercise.
What's a DDoS? I thought that was a spelling error.
It's stammering.
Oh, I know why I had holiday last week. To take me away from the despair.
It's a simulated DDoS. It's a mistake they didn't even mean to make.
So they've actually done some tests.
You just stuttered then as well. What?
They've done some tests, haven't they?
Who has?
Well, this, the European Union.
Right.
So I wonder how much how much did that cost us then?
I think it was 17 and 6.
Was it?
Pence.
Yeah, right. The trouble is, guys, if they do it, invariably the cyber criminals can do it as well.
That's what I've just been saying.
But that was satellites.
It's the same thing, really. It's all happening up in space.
But satellites... Now, it is true, Lee, that some internet traffic goes via satellite. Oh, dear. Anyway, cybercrime, the truth.
Hey, we're moving on.
Because I can't be bothered with the EU one. Boring.
Well, I think this is really interesting, that based on what we've just been talking about, that wonderfully... satellite-headed Foreign Secretary William Hague is warning the international an international conference in Budapest.
Put your teeth in.
Yeah, that cybercrime is one of the greatest and global and strategic challenges of our time.
True.
And Mr. Hague, when he's not drinking all that beer, knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's setting up a £2 million cybercrime centre.
Well, it doesn't sound very much that to me, does it to you?
Can I ask, what was this international conference about? I mean, was it about cats cybercrime or something like that? And he had nothing better to say? Because, I mean, everybody knows this.
Well, exactly.
Cybercrime conference.
Yeah, but it was a cybercrime conference.
Yeah, that's why we're talking about cybercrime. Well, it was about the NHS.
I agree with
Maybe
you, Mark.
Maybe he was trying to avoid talking with the NHS, so he decided to talk about cybercrime instead.
It does make me wonder.
It's a cunning stunt.
Yes. It makes me wonder when these MPs catch up with the real world. Because we all know about this.
Yes.
Well, we all know about it. And what I'm saying is the fact that they are bragging about the fact that they've set up a £2 million cybercrime centre. Yeah. I think that's the biggest joke of the lot. Shall we mention the university that we know that has been doing this sort of work fairly covertly for the last 3 years?
Yeah, it's called Bedfordshire University.
Bedfordshire University. And we know the chap who's helped out with the finance on that, don't we?
We do. And this, again, shocks me that you've got a very well-respected... computer centre type university,
yeah,
that's been doing all this stuff for years, and yet
unsung.
Yeah, and so Mr. Hay then goes off and says, I'm going to spend £2 million on something that somebody's already done.
Do you know how much it costs to set the cyber thing up at Bedfordshire University, or should we not mention that? But
it was about 60 grand, I think.
Yeah, and really, if you think that was basically one university and a helpful hand, and this is an international thing. We're going to spend £2 million.
What I don't understand is, for instance, I think about this poor boy who's basically an autistic genius of some sort who hacked into the Pentagon computers, so he's obviously the kind of guy that we really need working in this new center so that he can start finding out about cybercrime. We're just about to export his brains over to the United States of America so he can be incarcerated in some long-term solitary
Employing him.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, you know, absolutely. Give him a job. He can be a terrific asset to the country. I mean, anybody who can hack into the Pentagon defense system, surely they've got to be worth their blinking crust.
I suppose it was a bit naughty.
Yeah. But by the same token, he is, as Mark... Well, I'll use a different one. I think he's worth his weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Because Mr. Hague should be not spending £2 million, go over there and sit with the boy and his mum for a bit and go, excuse me, how'd you do this then?
Yeah, well, I mean, they could put him into a nick in Wormwood Scrubs and pay him £2 a week or whatever prisoners normally get, doing exactly that. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And you don't need to set up a cybercrime centre because you do it in the Scrubs.
Exactly. And the other point is, Mark, there is one already.
He'd be worth his weight in mailbags, wouldn't he?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. MPs have voiced concerns about off-payroll tax arrangements.
Yeah,
the dummies.
This is
the
amazing.
Dummies. The dummies.
They're doughies, yeah. Let's spit them all out.
Yes, abso-flipping-lutely. Yeah. The tax arrangements of some public sector workers, including thousands at the BBC, have been criticised by MPs. Oh, really?
Yeah, and hundreds in the House of Commons, I can imagine as well. They don't seem to realise that they're taking their trousers down at the moment and they're in a glass house.
Yes, and they also don't realise that part of the industry of the BBC, broadcasting, has for decades and decades lived on short-term contracts. These people are not working 8 hours a day that they're talking about. They are working on maybe 3 months' contracts for 3-hour shifts. They are self-employed people. They go out and open the shops and help old ladies across the street and all sorts of other stuff. And the fact is, they are talking about something they don't understand.
Well, I don't think that they don't understand it. I think that they understand it exactly. And I think this is just another attack by politicians on something that they wish to, that they hate, which is the media generally. And the simple fact is that freelance work is something that has been around forever. Mm. And nobody who employs a freelance pays the tax or the national insurance for them. It's a simple fact of life. I can't believe that the Public Accounts Committee are so ludicrous to actually go public on this.
Well, it says in their press release that they were shocked to find the BBC had 25,000 such off-payroll contracts, which can be everybody from who supplies a satellite dish when they need one quickly, through to somebody who's going to do an on-air shift once a blue moon in the middle of the night.
And it's 25,000 people who otherwise might be claiming dole.
Exactly. Ah!
I hate politicians.
Mark, you're right. If you live in a glass house, don't throw stones.
Yeah. Or take your pants down, unless you fancy doing it.
Actually,
and there's somebody watching.
I wonder if the BBC could do something.
No, the BBC definitely couldn't do anything. They'd never have been able to. And
I'm just wondering if they could finance a little bit of research to show how many people in the Parliament actually are self-employed.
Well, I think that's really what you need to be looking at. You need to be looking at all the tax arrangements of the members of Parliament and all the people who assist them.
What you people know. Would be self-employed in Parliament?
Well, I think lots of them are.
Caterers, for one.
Caterers will be on
contract. All the researchers. There's probably a huge number. Don't forget, it was revealed quite recently that a lot of our civil service are on these sort of external contracts and running their own companies and what have you. I mean, you know, government is awash with it.
Bless you.
Are you all right, Mark? Don't die.
Don't die. It's all right. And I can assure you, boys and girls, because I've been on one of these contracts, that, you know, you get paid on what they call a reverse invoice. So they have all the paperwork. It's all put through to revenue, da-di-da-di-da. It, then, you know, when you accept the money, you accept it on the premise, because when you sign up, that's what you have to do, that you will pay your tax, your contributions, da-di-da-di-da. Yeah. And, you know, you couldn't have, I'm trying to think, there would often be months, well, not months, but quite long periods of time, where I, as a journalist working for the BBC, wouldn't be needed. And yet come Christmas time, in the December month, I was on every day of the ruddy week.
Exactly, and it's also they're talking about presenters and stars, and they're saying, well, why should the BBC employ these people? You know, it, like you say, it's a short-term contract anyway.
The
shows are only... Yeah, exactly. The shows, say Jonathan Ross, for instance, when he was on the BBC, he might have had a run of, what, 3 months with his show, then nothing. So why would he have to be paid as a member of staff? That is just ludicrous. It is shamefully, stupidly, ludicrously, outrageously
and
ridiculous.
And what's more, gentlemen, if we think about this logically, by doing so, the BBC actually saves money and therefore saves the licence fee payer money, because if they roll on PAYE, then the
BBC... have holiday pay.
Exactly, the BBC would have to make so many contributions...
Sick pay.
It would be outlandish. The costs would go up dramatically. So the MPs are saying, let's put the licence fee up.
Is it nearly November?
Must be.
What happens in November?
The 5th.
I thought.
I was with him. Others weren't. Guys, you are just writing up something that is ludicrous because you don't understand what the hell you're talking about.
Exactly, and I couldn't agree more. This is incredible. It is unbelievable and stupid.
We all agree.
I'm ashamed of all our politicians. I think they should all be put up against the wall and shot.
I think it's even more astounding we all agree on the subject. Funny one to end. Funny one to end part one as we come literally to the end. A Brighton All You Can Eat restaurant is banned greedy eaters. My words.
Unbelievable. And the place is called Gobby. They should shut the gobs.
Look, hang on. This is not the real story, is it?
Go on.
It's certainly an all-you-eat restaurant, but according to the restaurateur, which means a person who owns the restaurant.
That was you. You don't have to correct yourself, Mark.
Apparently, the problem was that these two guys used to rush up to the buffet and in their hurry to get as much as they could onto their plates. They would sort of mix it all up, barge people out the way, and leave the buffet looking like a complete mess. Now, if that's the case, maybe
that's
there's some justification here. So, we don't really know what the story is.
Based on the fact that it's an old you-can-eat-for-12 quid restaurant, they've got 5.5 hours, and they didn't. My mate, this is a true story, my mate, and I won't mention
10
it,
seconds.
So he'd be embarrassed, he had 11 children, and he would regularly take his places, take his kids to where places where children eat for free.
There we go, that's the end of part one, a postcard from Pop Red. We'll be back in part two, fasting you can drink that milkshake.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.